Vasudevaya.
Om Namo Bhagavate Vasudevaya.
Om Namo Bhagavate Vasudevaya.
Om Namo Bhagavate Vasudevaya.
Did you get a report for, on Mother Nanda from Kalakanta Prabhu yesterday? Okay, I'll give you one. I wrote him, and he said he was going to tell all of you, but I guess he didn't get here yet. She returned home by 3 o'clock in the afternoon. She was home, and she was in good spirits. She's a little weak, and she's tired, but she's well. And it'll be probably a week or two before she's up to her, you know, moving about. But she's already, when I came in last night, she was sitting at a desk. She's feeling okay. The prognosis is very good. They said that doesn't look like there's any spreading at all. But she won't know completely until Tuesday. She has to go back to the doctor on Tuesday. And on Tuesday, they'll give her the lab results. But right now, from what they can see, looks like it's over. So, by Krishna's grace and your prayers, she's very grateful to the prayers, for the prayers of the devotees. So, she said the best thing about this whole thing is all the prayers of the devotees. So, and she's telling jokes and she's funny. She's doing good. So, that's the latest on the Nanda story. Okay, so today we're reading Canto 1, Chapter 16, Text 10. Actually, Text 10 through 16. The title of the chapter is How Parikit Received the Age of Kali. And we'll read verse 10, and then I'll read the other verses. Sutta Uvacha.
Yada
Parikshit Kuru
Jungale
Vasat Kaling Parvishtang Nija Chakravartite Nishamya Vartam Anati Priyam Tata Sarasanam Sam Yuga Saudira Dede
Yada Parikshit Kuru
Jungle
Vasat
Kaling Parishtam Nija Chakravartite Nishamya vartang anati priyam tata. Sharasanam sam yuga sandiradade. Somebody else want to chant?
Sutuvacha.
Kata Parikshit Kuru Jungale Vasat
Kalim Bhavishtang Nija Chakravartite
Sasamya Vartam Anati Priyam Tata
Sarasanam Yisam Yuga Saudiradade
Yada Parikshit Kuru Jungale Vasat
Kalim Parvishtam Nija Chakravartite
Nishamya Vartam Anati Priyam Vasat
Sharashanam Sham Yuga Sardiradade
Yada Parikshit Kuru Jungale Vasat
Yada Parikshit Kuru Jungale Vasat
chakravartite
kaling pravishtam nija chakravartite
itam
priyatam anati priyam tata
sarasanam samyuga shandir adade
sarasanam samyuga shandir adade Sutta Uvacha. Sutta Goswami said,
Yada.
When?
Parikshit.
Maharaj Parikshit. Kuru Jungale. In the capital of Kuru's empire. Avasat
was residing.
Kalim, the symptoms of the age of Kali. Pravishtam, entered. Nija Chakravartite, within his jurisdiction. Nishamya, thus hearing. Vartam, news. Anati Priyang, not very palatable. Tata, thereafter. Sarasanam, arrows and bow. Samyuga, having gotten a chance for. Sandhi, martial activities. Adade, took up. Translation. Sutta Goswami said, while Maharaj Parikshit was residing in the capital of the Kuru Empire, the symptoms of the age of Kali began to infiltrate within the jurisdiction of his state. When he learned about this, he did not think the matter very palatable. This did, however, give him a chance to fight. He took up his bow and arrows and prepared himself for military activities. Purport. The state administration of Maharaj Parikshit was so perfect that he was sitting in his capital peacefully. But he got the news that the symptoms of the age of Kali had already infiltrated into the jurisdiction of his state, and he did not like this news. What are the symptoms of the age of Kali? They are 1, illicit connection with women. 2, indulgence in meat eating. 3, intoxication. And 4, taking pleasure in gambling. The age of Kali literally means the age of quarrel. And the above, excuse me, and the above mentioned 4 symptoms in human society are the root causes for all kinds of quarrel. Maharaj Parikshit heard that some of the people of the state had already taken to those symptoms, and he wanted to take immediate steps against such causes of unrest. This means that at least up to the regime of Maharaj Parikshit, such symptoms of public life were practically unknown, and as soon as they were slightly detected, he wanted to root them out. The news was not palatable for him, but in a way it was, because Maharaj Parikshit got a chance to fight. There was no need to fight with small states because everyone was peacefully under his subordination. But the Kali Yuga miscreants gave his fighting spirit a chance for exhibition. A perfect Kshatriya king is always jubilant as soon as he gets a chance to fight, just as a sportsman is eager when there is a chance for a sporting match. It is no argument that in the age of Kali, such symptoms are predestined. If so, then why was the preparation for fighting out such, symptoms? Such arguments are offered by lazy and unfortunate men. In the rainy season, rain is predestined, and yet people take precautions to protect themselves. Similarly, in the age of Kali, the symptoms as above mentioned are sure to infiltrate into social life. But it is the duty of the state to save the citizens from the association of the agents of the age of Kali. Maharaj Parikshit wanted to punish the miscreants indulging in the symptoms of Kali and thus save the innocent citizens who were pure in habit and culture of religion. It is the duty of the king to give such protection, and Maharaj Parikshit was perfectly right when he prepared himself to fight. So now I'll read text 11. Maharaj Parikshit sat on a chariot drawn by black horses. His flag was marked with the sign of a lion.
being so decorated and surrounded by charioteers, cavalry, elephants, and infantry soldiers, he left the capital to conquer in all directions. Someone want to read text 12? Is there another mic? Yes.
Maharaj Parikshit then conquered all parts of the earthly planet. Bhadrashva, Ketumala, Bharata, and the northern Kuru, Kim Purusha, etc., and exacted tributes from their respective rulers.
This purport here, although it's quite long, it's mostly just descriptions of these places. And the next verse?
Text 13 to 15.
13 through 15.
Wherever the king visited, he continuously heard the glories of his great forefathers, who were all devotees of the Lord, and also of the glorious acts of Lord Krishna. He also heard how he himself had been protected by the Lord from the powerful heat of the weapon of Ashwatthama. People also mentioned the great affection between the descendants of Rishni and Pratha due to the latter's devotion to Lord Keshava. The king, being very pleased with the singers of such glories, opened his eyes in great satisfaction. Out of magnanimity, he was pleased to award them very valuable necklaces and clothing.
Okay. Am I supposed to read text 16 too? It's a very long purport. Okay, I'm gonna stop there. So, if we consider, first of all, that Maharaj Parikshit got word that the age of Kali was beginning to infiltrate into his kingdom. So if we look at our present situation, we can understand that we hardly notice. I mean, people notice that Kali Yuga is getting worse. But Kali Yuga, the symptoms of Kali Yuga are so pervading that they don't stand out very much. They're just kind of there. And we live with them. We live with them on a day-to-day basis as if it was the norm, right? We think it's perfectly normal for people to eat meat, for instance. Everybody thinks it's completely normal for people to eat. When I once went, there was a grocery store in Toronto when I first went there in 1971. And it was just a little teeny grocery store, but I used to go there and buy flowers for the deities. And there was a 12-year-old girl there, and she was selling or asking for donations and distributing these little hearts for the Humane Society to be kind to animals. But she was doing it right in front of the butcher counter in this grocery store. And so I said to her, do you realize where you're standing asking people to be kind to animals? And she didn't make a connection. I said, you know, these are all animals. And I showed her the counter where she was standing in front. And I said, do you eat meat? And she said, everybody eats meat. So anyway, we had a little bit of a conversation, but the reality is that it's just perfectly normal. I've had several experiences in my caring for people that they've, like I was telling my students at the Bhakti Bhavan the other day, that once in our ashram in the school, the girls, they snuck out at night, 1 o'clock in the morning, with the guys. I hope you weren't one of them. And and they went to an elementary school, and they were playing basketball in the elementary school, you know, area, playground, whatever. So the police picked them up because they were trespassing. It was 1 o'clock in the morning. And so they called us up at 1 o'clock in the morning and they said, you know, we have some of your girls. So we were thrilled about it, very happy. So we went and we got the girls and then we talked to the police officer and we asked the police officer if he would be willing to have them come in and kind of scare them a little bit that what they did was dangerous and it wasn't good. And he said, come on. They didn't do anything. They weren't drunk. They weren't stoned. They weren't doing anything wrong. It was just that was a big deal. 1 o'clock in the morning, running away from home, no problem. So you can see the relative value system, right? When one person looks at a situation with the vision of Shastra, the vision of what society is supposed to be like, a potentially very dangerous and potentially very wrong situation, wanting to be correct, then their thing is, well, look, if there was no murder involved, no drugs involved, no, you know, what's the big deal? You know, it's okay. And so let it go. But Maharaj Pickard didn't have that attitude. He saw that as soon as there was any indication that Kali Yuga was beginning, what to speak of, supersaturated in society, he wanted to take action immediately. And this is one of the reasons why he wanted to fight, because he had an obligation, and he felt it very strongly, that he had a very strong obligation to his citizens, to protect them from the age of Kali. Actually, the whole Srimad Bhagavatam, from the beginning to the end, is spoken with this intention, that the same sages of Namasharanya, they heard the Kali Yuga is starting, and they thought, oh no, this is going to be a problem. So many bad things are going to come into society. We better hold a 1,000-year sacrifice and see if we can do something to stay off the problems that are about to be caused by the age of Kali. So they were Brahmins. Their inclination wasn't to enter into the fray. But still, they saw the danger looming on the horizon, and they had the desire to do something about it. So within their sphere, they performed a sacrifice and tried to mitigate the dangers of the age of Kali. Maharaj Parikit, on the other hand, was a Kshatriya. So when he saw the symptoms of the age of Kali, he also took action. But as it mentions here, his mode of action, very happily, was to fight. And it says in Bhagavad Gita, happy are the soldier, the Kshatriyas to whom such fighting opportunities come unsought. So if one's nature is to fight, then, and he's not driven by passion or personal selfish interest, then he has to wait patiently until there's an appropriate opportunity to display his power. And by Krishna's grace, here it was, that Kali Yuga, which was an unwanted thing, was infringing on his kingdom, and it had no right to be there. So therefore, he got the opportunity to fight. There's a story in regards to the age of Kali. Maybe you've heard it before, some of you, because I told it one night on Tuesday night, but it's worth hearing again. It's a very nice story. It comes from the Mahabharata, and it also speaks to the way that governance was done according to Vedic principles. So the king or the ruler was a very active in trying to satisfy and assist the citizens in their spiritual quest. It wasn't a passive thing, and it wasn't a self-interested thing. We find now that so-called rulers or so-called administrators, they're very self-interested. They're all thinking about what's in this for me. They take huge salaries, and they promise anything, and they do hardly anything, and they don't really take an active role in working with the citizens and hearing from them. They hear rather from big lobbying groups. And those interests, those business interests, because they have money in their control or some other source of power, blackmail or whatever, they control the government's actions and so markedly affect them that even to the point of endangering the citizens, they're allowed to act according to their whims because they pay off. And so the result is that the government is really not by the people, nor is it for the people. And they will perish from the earth. So the rulers of before, Maharaj Parikit, and we hear about Yudhisthira Maharaj, and so many other great kings are mentioned in the Bhagavatam pages, that they were very, very concerned about the citizens. And they would walk, and they would send, Ramchandra would send spies out, but not spies to find out what was going, you know, what intrigues were going on. He would send spies so that he could hear the feedback of the citizens in a neutral way. He wanted to know what they thought. And because there was no survey monkey, he couldn't do surveys easily. So he sent out spies to find out, to put the ear, to the people, and here, what do you think of my reign? Am I doing a good job? Is there anything I need to improve? Is there something that I can make better? So he heard that people were speaking poorly about what he had done with Sita, because she had lived with Ravana, and some low-class person was criticizing, well, I'm not going to take back Sita the way Ram took, I'm not going to take back my wife the way Ram took back Sita. And he was pained, very greatly pained by the fact that, first of all, Sita, he knew, was above reproach, but also that the citizen, some citizen, even one, was thinking of him in a bad way. And he knew that if his reputation was at all compromised, then the citizens would be compromised in their ability to follow his instruction. And that would be very detrimental for their spiritual advancement, because they had to be able to have someone who they could follow with great reverence and with great respect in order to advance in spiritual life. So the kings, they made themselves aware by several different means. They made themselves aware of what was going on in the kingdom so that they could act swiftly if anything went wrong, and they could also be sensitive to the needs of the citizens. So in this particular case, Maharaj Yudhisthira, he had a policy that he would sit in state, and he would allow the citizens to come to him and ask whatever questions they had or express any grievances they had. And in order to deal with the large volume of people that might come to see him, he had his brothers also stationed to act as initial recipients of those questions. So first the person would go to the brother and ask a question. If the brother couldn't answer, then they would get to Yudhisthira eventually, and Yudhisthira would satisfy their inquiry. So at first, this particular day, Bhima was sitting, and he was receiving the question. So someone came in and said, I have a question. He said, I saw something today which was very strange, and I would like you to tell me why, what it means. He said, I have a garden, and around the garden I have a wall. And the wall has always protected my garden from outside influences. But now I'm noticing that the garden is moving in. I mean, the wall is moving in, and it's actually encroaching on the garden. Can you explain that to me? I don't understand how that's happening or why it's happening. And Bhima thought for a minute, and he said, well, I don't really know. I guess you'll have to go and ask Yudhisthira. So the guy went in. A few minutes later, another person came and said, I have a question. So Bhima thought, well, maybe I'll do better with this question than I did with the other question. What is it? He said, well, I have a bucket of water, and I poured it into five other buckets. And then I took the five buckets and I poured them back into the original bucket. And when I poured them back, they didn't fill up the original bucket. There was less water. And I didn't see, there was no leaking, no water was lost, I didn't spill any, but somehow in the transfer, the water disappeared. So I don't understand that. Why did that happen? How did that happen? Bhima thought, oh boy, I'm not doing very well today. I don't really know. You'll have to go in and talk to Yudhisthira. So he went in. And then another person came and said, I have a question. And he said, well, what is it? He said, I saw something really strange today, and I want to know why. I don't understand it. He said, what is it? He said, well, I saw an elephant walk through a hole in a wall, but after the elephant got through, his tail got stuck. So, gee, I don't understand how that happened. Bhima said, I don't understand how it happened either. I don't know. You'll have to go ask Yudhisthira. So he went in. And then finally a fourth person came. And the fourth person said, I have a question. He said, a lot of people have questions today that I haven't been able to answer, but I'll do my best. Go ahead. He said, well, I saw this huge mountain. And on the mountain there was a vine. And someone came and pulled the vine and the whole mountain fell down. So I don't understand that. Can you explain it to me? Bhima couldn't explain. And he went in. So then at the end of the day, Bhima was thinking the whole day, I wonder what happened with these far... I really would like to hear the answers to these far-out questions. So he went to Yudhisthira, and he said, Yudhisthira, did you see those four men? He said, what four men? He said, well, there were four men that had questions that I couldn't answer. He said, Yudhisthira said, what were the questions? So Bhima explained the questions, and Yudhisthira became very disturbed. He said, where are those people? He said, I don't know. I sent them to you. He said, well, they never came to me. He said, where did they go? Because those four people are the harbingers of the age of Kali. So Bhima said, well, you've got to tell me. How did you know that? He said, well, the first one with the wall encroaching on the garden is the government, that the government is there to protect the people. But in the age of Kali, the government will actually encroach upon the people and take their freedom away rather than protecting their freedom. And the second person was the bucket, the water. He said, that's family life in the age of Kali, that the family works, the parents work very hard, and they fill up the bucket. And then when it comes down, they put so much energy into their children. But then when they get old, the children don't repay all that's been invested in them, and they just leave them under someone else's care. They don't take care nicely. They don't reciprocate sufficiently. And the third one, the elephant that went through and the tail got stuck, he said, well, that one, that is the government, big government, and the economic situation in this age of Kali. Because in the age of Kali, the big business interest, the elephant, will get through with doing all kinds of nonsense, and no one will stop him. No one will arrest him. He'll get some little slap on the hand, but he'll get through. But the little guy, the tail, the little guy, he'll get caught. For doing the slightest thing, he'll get in big trouble, and he'll get arrested, and they'll make a big thing out of it because this is the age of Kali. And the last one, what about the last one, the mountain with a vine on it? He said, well, that actually is the mercy of the age of Kali, because that mountain is the sum total of all our impious activities, all the bad karma that is now we're destined to get in the age of Kali. But that vine is the devotional service to the Supreme Lord. And that, by just engaging in devotional service to the Supreme Lord, and specifically by chanting the holy name, that mountain of sinful activity can be destroyed. So that was the explanation of the four things, the symptoms of the age of Kali. And Prabhupada here, he gives four hallmarks of those mentalities, that meat eating will kill the quality of mercy. No more mercy. When we have no mercy, then we take advantage of the citizens. We don't worry about them. We don't care about their material or spiritual welfare, the citizens being whoever is under our care, be we a parent or a government officer or a teacher. We have people under our care, and we're responsible for their welfare. And then, and if we take advantage of them, it's like the quality of mercy is diminished. And if we don't live in a clean way, the illicit sex is the hallmark of lack of cleanliness. The cleanliness is disintegrated. So then we have a society not only with a dirty way of life, but a dirty heart, dirty mind, and they appreciate things which cause contamination, right? They like to read things which are contaminating to the mind and heart. They like to see things which are contaminating to the mind and heart. They like to do things which are contaminating to the mind and heart. So the whole society becomes polluted. Arjuna was also afraid of that in the beginning of the Bhagavad Gita. The people will become, the traditions will be destroyed, the women will become polluted, the men will not protect them, they'll not take that responsibility. So if cleanliness is destroyed by illicit sex, and intoxication destroys the inclination to undergo austerity, so no austerity, meaning I'm not willing to make any sacrifices. I only care about me and what happens to me, and does it feel good now? And so if I'm only thinking in those terms, what feels good to me, what matters to me is what feels good to me now, then I'll be willing to step on other people. I'll be willing to do all kinds of nonsense because it feels good. So that tendency to, or that lack of ability or willingness to undergo austerity causes people to be, cutthroat in their attempt to enjoy their own sense gratification. They're willing to do anything in order to get their own sense gratification. And finally, truthfulness, which is described here in the Bhagavatam as the last remaining leg of Dharma in this age of Kali, which is now very weak, is destroyed by gambling. And we see that now gambling is becoming proliferated all over the place. They say no gambling in this place. So they go out in the water just past the boundary and they gamble there, and then they provide a shuttle bus, a shuttle boat that'll take you out so you can gamble just past the boundary where you're not allowed to gamble. Right on the other side, they have a big boat with a casino in it. You can go. And there's even some places now that willingly allow gambling. And people are gambling all the time with their lives and so many other ways they're gambling. And that destroys truthfulness, because when you think that winning is all that matters, you're willing to lie and cheat in order to get it. So Maharaj Parikshit, he saw these symptoms too, just like Yudhisthira heard the symptoms were by those questions. Maharaj Parikshit also, he saw that they were actually happening, just like with our friend Mother Nanda. She took quick action. As soon as she saw the symptom of an unwanted visitor in her body, she took quick action and she was able to eliminate it and stop the future problem. I announced to them what the situation was. So in the same way, we see the cancer of the age of Kali coming. And Maharaj Parikshit saw, oh no, if I let this go unchecked, if I let this spread, then my duty, my obligation to the citizens will be unsuccessful. I will not do my responsibility. And it's interesting that in these verses, Prabhupada notes, and Krishna notes, in the Srimad Bhagavatam, when he went around, because he was looking for where to find these symptoms of the age of Kali, he kept hearing praises of his family, of his heritage, and specifically he was hearing praises of his family in relation to Krishna. That his family members, his father, his grandfather, they were great devotees of Krishna. And so he was hearing glorification of the relationship, what Krishna had done for them. And especially the Kurukshetra battle, which was another attempt to stay off the coming of the age of Kali. Because Krishna didn't want Duryodhana and Dhritarashtra to manage any longer, because they weren't leading their people in a spiritually strong way. And so he himself, Krishna himself, took the position of Arjuna's chariot. What was Arjuna's relationship to Maharaj Parikshit? Grandfather. So Arjuna had the mercy of having Krishna as his chariot driver. His grandfather, you know, you have sometimes your grandfather, it tells you about, well, I was in the war, I remember, in Germany. My father always used to be angry at the Red Cross, because apparently there was some place where they came and they gave donuts to the Navy, and he was in the Air Force, and they didn't give donuts to the people in the Air Force. For 60 years, my father never gave a donation to the Red Cross. 40 years. He even told me they would call and they'd say, this is the Red Cross. And he'd say, I'm sorry, I was in World War II. I'll never give a donut. And they said, well, we tried to bring donuts in. They actually knew about the situation, you know, when they spoke to him on the phone. We tried to bring donuts in. So this kind of care, we have to bring donuts. But there's more important care, and Krishna actually took the trouble to be Arjuna's chariot driver. He acted as a servant to Krishna. So Parikshit Maharaj, to Arjun rather. So Parikshit Maharaj was hearing these glories, and this made him feel even more that he had a huge responsibility to his citizens. He had to uphold this tremendously powerful dynasty that he had been born into, and that was actually directly connected with the Supreme Personality of Godhead. So that made the weight of his responsibility even greater. That I have to do this. I have to do this right. And if Kali Yuga is creeping into my kingdom, I better do something about it. And so he took action. He was a fighter. Now, taking that down home to us, I look at myself when I first became a devotee of Krishna, and I was a rebel. I was in the Students for a Democratic Society, which then was called SDS. I don't know if they still have one of those. But we were picketing and doing all kinds of things on college campuses, which I won't mention because I don't want you to follow suit. But we were speaking in no unclear terms that we don't like this society. We don't like this society. This society is going to the dogs, and we want it changed now. So we weren't exactly violent. We were a little violent, but we were active, very active in speaking. But we didn't know what to do. If someone would have said to us, here's the key, you know, here's the government, you're right, here's the government, you take it over, we probably wouldn't be sitting here now because it would have been a pretty bad situation. Because although we knew what was wrong, we had no idea what was right. And we had that Kshatriya mentality that we wanted to do something about it, but we didn't know what to do about it. So now, as devotees, we may feel angry. We may feel angry at Monsanto, and we may feel angry at so many different organizations and groups of people who are leading people wrongly and are taking this society into a situation which is progressively more damaging. And even though we try to be like the lotus flower, Kamala Dala Dala, that where the water on the lotus flower never wets the lotus leaf. It's just like a jewel on the top, and when you tip the leaf, even slightly, it just rolls off. It doesn't absorb anything. So even though we try to be like that, unaffected by what's happening, we're not unaffected. When Kali Yuga gets really intense, it makes it harder for us to practice Krishna consciousness. It makes it personally more difficult for us to remain unaffected. It's in your face, all over the place. It's on billboards. It's everywhere. So it's all pervading, and it makes it harder for us to preach Krishna consciousness, like what's going on in Russia. And by the way, it's not over yet. Still going on. What just happened in Hungary, big fight. Also for the right to be devotees. In Belgium, Krishna consciousness is still not legal, and they're working on getting it to be recognized as it's not persecuted, but it's also not legal. So it's not recognized as an established religion. So considering that, we don't get the perks from the government that other religious organizations get. We have to go in a different way. So still in this society, Kali Yuga is making it difficult for us to spread Krishna consciousness. So the little bit of Kshatriya, because all of us are mixed blood, you know, in the age of Kali, everyone's mixed, all varnas. Sudra is predominant, but we all have a little Kshatriya blood in us. So we have to engage in a fight, but not like Maharaj Parikshit, not like we take a sword and a shield and we go out on our chariot ready to kill anybody who messes around, right? But we take the Sangopangastra. What's the Sangopangastra that Lord Chaitanya came with? The holy name is the Sangopangastra. So we have this, that we have to kill the non-devotional mentality, and the weapon is the holy name. So in Prabhu Nityananda and Haridas Thakur, they set the example door to door, trying to rectify Jagai and Madhai, running after them through the streets of Nadia, yelling at them, and Haridas Thakur saying, Nityananda, you're crazy. What am I doing with you on the street? And these people are running. I'm an old man. How are we supposed to? But they were determined. Nityananda was determined to spread the holy name. So we have to also look at our family line. that we come in the line of Srila Prabhupada, who was a fighter. He was starting a spiritual revolution, he often said. And he wanted to change the course of the age of Kali on behalf of Chaitanya Mahaprabhu. So we also have a long line of spiritual warriors. Bhaktisiddhanta Saraswati, the lion guru. People would walk, they'd see him coming, they'd cross the other side of the street, because they know, don't mess with Bhaktisiddhanta Saraswati. And he would be prepared to fight anybody, to argue with anybody, to present the philosophy of Krishna consciousness, and he was so strong. And Bhaktivinoda Thakur also was such a strong preacher that he took on people who even threatened the life of his family. His family got sick due to some mystic yogis telling him, if you mess with me, your family will die. And then his family got sick. His wife got very ill. And he still went on anyway. He couldn't be stopped. And finally had his hair cut off. And then he lost all his power. But he was ready to go to fight, to go to jail, to suffer. He got so ill, they had to carry him into the courtroom. But he was determined to try Vishvakshena, that was his name. Because Vishvakshena was pretending to be an incarnation of Mahavishnu. We have Mahavishnu, right? There's a band, there used to be a rock band when I was a kid, when I was a new devotee, of these guys called Mahavishnu. We used to distribute Sri Ashapanishads in the parking lot. Tell them this is program. You can't understand what's going on without this book. Mahavishnu. So we also have to fight, but in a different way. Parikshit fought in his way, and ultimately we understand how he dealt with the age of Kali. He bargained with him, and Kali found a way to find a loophole in the contract. And so we see Kali everywhere now. So now we have the fight. The fight has become ours, and we have the weapon. We have the weapon of the holy name and the weapon of our own purity. Because if we are not fighting personally to keep Kali Yuga out of our self, of our heart, of our mind, of our senses, then once Kali infiltrates, it's much harder to get it out once it's in, right? So especially for our children and our society, we want to try to keep our society pure, but it begins with us. Sometimes I laugh. We had recently in Mayapur a thing called the ILS. Did you hear about it? Maybe I told you about it. The ISKCON Leadership Sangha. So 500-600 devotees came to Mayapur, leaders from all over the world. And it was a powerful, powerful, exciting group of people. But no one was saying ISKCON is this or ISKCON is that. They were saying, we are ISKCON. We are ISKCON. And we can't say ISKCON should do this, ISKCON should do that, because we are ISKCON. All of us are ISKCON. Collectively, we are ISKCON. If something's broke, we have to fix it. ISKCON isn't going to fix it, because ISKCON is us. And if we're all expecting, there's that little poem, I don't know it so much, but if everybody thinks that somebody will do something and then nobody does it, because everybody's waiting for somebody to do it, and somebody doesn't do it, so nobody does it. So we can't wait for somebody to do it. We have to do it ourselves. And we have to start with ourselves, that by becoming pure, becoming dedicated, becoming strong in our practice, we remove Kali from our own heart, and then we have the potency to remove it from society at large. So I'll stop there. And if there's any questions, we have a few minutes. How did I know? That's Stephanie in there. It's right there.
I was wondering, when the sages of Naimisharanya were doing the 1,000-year sacrifice to ward off the effects of Kali, did that do anything? Like, I don't know. Like, is it? Because, I mean, like.
I mean, I can't tell the specific effect of what they did. I'm sure it had some effect. Look what happened with Advaitacharya. Advaitacharya saw Kali coming. He saw some symptoms of Kali that really disturbed him, the preaching of impersonalism and Durga worship and the deviation from Vaishnava Siddhanta. And he just started, you know, threatening, I'm going to destroy everybody if you don't appear. And he offered some tulsi leaves and water, Ganga Jal, and Lord Chaitanya appeared. So one could say, well, did Lord Chaitanya do anything? Look at this mess. But he did do something, and he gave us the weapon with which to do more. So I'm sure they did something. I don't specifically, in a marked way, I can't tell you exactly what they did, but the age of Kali has been slowed down by the efforts of many acharyas, the sages at Namasharanya, Yudhisthira Maharaj, and all of the ones I mentioned, Bhaktivinoda Thakur, Srila Bhaktisiddhanta, they've all made a dent in the power of Kali Yuga. Prabhupada, definitely. Yes, Prabhu.
Wasn't it that the sages had all gathered there and they were prepared to do a 1,000-year sacrifice or longer if they had to, but then they didn't have to do it that long because then the whole Srimad Bhagavatam was spoken.
The whole Bhagavatam was spoken.
Sacrifice.
Yeah, that was also, that's another thing, that when the sages, you know, one of the questions that Parikshit asked is, where do I go to find the answers that'll unlock the truth in the age of Kali? And the answer was, this Bhagavatam has risen like the sun to dissipate the darkness of the age of Kali. So the Bhagavatam is here. But if you're asking specifically what the sages did to help, you know, I don't know exactly what the result of their sacrifice was. They didn't, they ultimately wound up hearing the Bhagavatam. Anything else? Yes. Thank you. Hare Krishna.
My question was, the Srila Prabhupada, my question is that Srila Prabhupada's
supporting Maharaj Parikshit here, saying that he was perfectly right when he prepared himself to fight. And normally, I mean, regardless of someone's position, normally that's not the first recourse. Mm-hmm. In other words, something's going wrong. Oh, let me go kill this person. He's doing something wrong. I've got to take him out of his position. Got to take him down. Mm-hmm. So, you know, it seems to me, in general, this principle is an extreme and fanaticism.
Well, if you
so I'm just asking, I mean, just saying, you know, from a general perspective, uh-huh. So I wanted to see how you can actually support Parikshit's decision to kill Kali.
Well, in order to maintain, he didn't know what he was going to fight, right? He just kind of grabbed everything he had and he went out there to fight, to deal with it. You know, the word fight, but he came out there to fight. And if you read the rest of the chapter, he first went to all the kingdoms and checked it out to see what the damage control, you know. And then when he finally found Kali, he threatened him, right? He took his sword out and he threatened him, and then he negotiated with him. And some people even said, why didn't he just kill him there? I mean, the guy was in the dress of a king. He wasn't really a king. He was herding a cow and a bull, and that's forbidden. So why didn't he do something else? Like if you walked in and saw someone beating your mother, right? Someone, you walk into your house, you come home from work at night, and someone's got a knife and they're stabbing your mother. Would you talk to them? Would you negotiate with them? Well, let's talk about this. Why are you doing this? Of course, maybe they'll surrender and say, don't call the cops on me. I'll try and be good. But I don't think you'd listen. But Maharaj Parikshit listened. So we have to be a little careful that we maintain academic integrity, which means, and this is, you have to say this to whoever questions this, is that you have to read the whole thing. You can't just read one verse, which says he went out to fight. You have to read what he did, actually what he did. And academic integrity demands that we look at the thing in context, and we not just look at one verse or one paragraph or one action. We have to look at the big picture. And if you look at the big picture, you see that he did do what you said. Fighting was the last thing. And he didn't even do it in this case, actually. He didn't even do it. He actually let Kali go. So, much to the chagrin of some people. So, we have to have integrity. And anyone who wants to question the efficacy of something in the Bhagavatam has to look at the whole Bhagavatam. This is a very, I remember when in 55th Street, New York, in 19, maybe 82, when Adi Keshava was brought up in charges of brainwashing. And so he asked Srila Prabhupada what he should do, because some girl, her parents, were claiming that the Hare Krishnas had brainwashed their daughter. And so Prabhupada told him, you take your danda, you wear your lungi, your saffron cloth, your shaved head, and you go into the courtroom, and you present the whole Srimad Bhagavatam as evidence. And you tell the judge that he cannot make a judgment until he reads the whole Bhagavatam, because the whole Bhagavatam is evidence. And he won't understand anything unless he reads the whole Bhagavatam. So he told him to present a whole set of books as the evidence. So, and he did. He did do that. And I doubt that the judge read the whole thing, but the case was thrown out. So we have to be careful that sometimes, you know, even devotees do it. They take one line or one letter or one something and they say, well, Prabhupada said this. Yeah, but Prabhupada also said, you know, a million other times something else. So we have to look at the big picture. And then we can explain it. We can see it clearly that Maharaj Pickard agreed with you. Fighting is the last recourse. And you see it with Arjuna, too, in the Battle of Kurukshetra. Excuse me. You see it in the Battle of Kurukshetra also, that Arjuna didn't want to fight. That was his last recourse, right? He tried everything. Even Krishna didn't want them to fight. He went himself as the Shanti Dut and said, just give them five villages, and they'll be happy. And Duryodhana said, I won't give him as much land as you can put on the head of a pin. So then fighting was inevitable. And then even when fighting was inevitable, Arjuna said, I'm not going to fight. So it's actually there in our tradition.